Welcome to Advancement Daily's interview series. Today I welcome Dan Allenby to talk about his career in philanthropy and discuss the evolution of the industry. Dan is the principal and founder of AGN Resources, which helps educational institutions build exceptional fundraising teams through training and publications. Resources include webinars, workshops, a job board, and a library filled with articles, samples, templates, and much more. Dan's goal is to share best practices in fundraising and empower professionals to be more strategic, collaborative, and productive. Dan is an author, speaker, and consultant who has worked with academic institutions for over two decades to train their advancement staff and volunteers. A recipient of the prestigious Case Crystal Apple Award for Teaching Excellence, Dan is an internationally recognized expert on annual giving and constituent engagement. He chaired Case's Institute for Senior Annual Giving Professionals and its annual giving workshop for five collective terms and served on the faculty for Case's Summer Institute in Educational Fundraising. His book, Ideas for Annual Giving, offers the latest designs for helping institutions increase annual giving and boost alumni participation. Previously, he served as the Assistant Vice President for Annual Giving at Boston University and also led annual giving and member marketing efforts at Tufts University, Georgetown University, and the National Geographic Society. Dan received an MBA from Boston College and a BA from James Madison University, and he also holds a certificate in the Management of Communication Organizations from Tufts University. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you, Dan. It is truly an honor.
Sure. Jonathan, thank you very much, and it's a real pleasure to join you today, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
First, I'd like you to give us an introduction of your career as a fundraising professional. How did you get started and why did you stay in the field?
I like to joke that I was born to be a fundraiser, and that's because my father actually spent his entire career working in development and higher education. I don't think that I would have found myself working in this field if that had not been the case. Definitely growing up, got to watch my father work in university advancement at a time when it was really sort of a very small field and not many people really knew much about it. He had worked in banking prior to starting his first job in development, and I think that probably made a lot of sense at the time when the university that he went to work for was looking to hire a very small development staff. They talked to him, and I think having worked in banking, he had some experience talking to people about money and helping them think about finances and was comfortable with that. And I think that was probably all that was necessary in terms of being a qualified candidate at the time. And certainly that has changed. The industry has grown tremendously since then over the last 30, 40 years. And now it is a rapidly growing and fascinating place to work.
It sounds like your father was a huge inspiration and really laid the foundation for you to be successful if you chose a career in higher education fundraising, which of course you did. What were some of the pivotal moments in your evolution as a professional fundraiser, and how did those moments impact you?
Sure. I can, as I think back on my past 25 years in the field, there's definitely a few moments that come to mind, as I'm sure it is for a lot of people. My first job, I remember graduating from college, and I had really no idea what I would do, and I thought about teaching. It's always been something that interested me. I had grown up, with my father working in university advancement. I had grown up on or around college campuses, and that was very comfortable. So when I needed a job, so to speak, my father introduced me to some people, and I did some informational interviews, and was offered a job not long out of college running a call center for a university annual fund. And I remember actually being offered two jobs at the time. The person who offered me the job had an opening for an entry-level position as a direct mail coordinator in the annual fund and an entry-level position as a phone-a-thon manager in the annual fund, and they both paid exactly the same. And I basically had my choice, and I decided to take the phone-a-thon one because I felt like it was a people job. I thought it was a good chance to learn about management and how to manage a team and lead a team, and I really think that was a good choice for a lot of reasons. So the first job comes to mind, running a call center. And then after, 15 years working in annual giving, I was feeling a little lost. I wasn't sure exactly, if this was the right career for me. I was not particularly happy in my job and left higher education and went to work in the finance sector. And that didn't last long. I think I realized very quickly how much I actually did love higher education and fundraising, and came back shortly after. So it was sort of a homecoming in a way. But to me, everything from that point forward was sort of different because I had a total attitude adjustment. And I realized that, I was the person who was really responsible for being successful. I wasn't going to blame the organization I work for or the people I work for on whether or not I was fulfilled and happy. And since then, I think I've been nothing but fulfilled in my career. So I think the lesson there is it's all about attitude. another moment, I a little later in my career, I went and worked for a consulting firm doing consulting with universities and their fundraising campaigns. And that was a big moment, but probably the biggest moment of all for me was when I started AGN, my business, and that came a little later on. I had a full-time job, and decided to kind of start this as a side business. I think the generation now calls them side hustles, but really kind of like a side project that I was doing in the evenings, and it was just an idea and began to grow it slowly, and it grew over time. But I think definitely starting AGN was a real pivotal moment for me.
So it was really that fork in the road when you picked Phone-a-thon over more traditional direct marketing channels that set the stage for the rest of your career. You got exposure to networking and relationship building skills. You got exposure to managing large teams. And then, of course, moving to the private sector and then back to the nonprofit sector, I think you called it an attitude adjustment, but what you were really alluding to is that the onus is on the individual to be successful, to take on responsibility for oneself, to be intrinsically motivated, and that is going to allow you to achieve more than any environmental or organizational factors. And I think we can all learn a lot from that. And then, of course, what could be more pivotal for someone than starting their own business, in your case, AGN Resources. But at some point, you thought, I need to start a service specifically for professionals working in the fundraising subfield of annual giving. How did you develop the concept for AGN Resources?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned that I had worked in annual giving for, a good part of my career at that point, almost all of my career for that matter. And, I saw a lot of generalists out there, people who had worked in lots of different aspects of advancement. And, I think that certainly makes sense for people who are, looking to take on a leadership role at some point within an advancement shop, to have a lot of different experiences. And my experience was different in that I had worked at some different organizations, but really had begun to kind of carve a niche for myself in annual giving. And at the same time, I was, feeling as if annual giving really wasn't getting the support that it needed in terms of the industry. I saw a lot of major gift programs and principal gift programs, which were, getting the bulk of the resources and the support within advancement shops. And I felt like annual giving and a few other parts of advancement were sort of underserved. And I kind of saw that as an opportunity. And I, personally loved annual giving. And actually, a neighbor of mine who had three daughters, and his wife was pregnant, and they found out they were going to have another daughter. And we were kind of laughing together he was going to have this house full of young women. And he looked up at me and he said, Dan, it's good to specialize. And, at that moment, I laughed at the joke that he was making, but I think he also was making an important point. And I realized, I had developed a specialty in annual giving. And that was something that I thought that I could really use to bring value to organizations. In particular, I thought because annual giving had been kind of underserved, it really wasn't living up to its full potential. So, I guess my thinking when I started AGN and, originally it really was focused on helping annual giving programs, it's that, it's really good to have a specialty and it's good to specialize. It's good to have a niche. I think that's true in a lot of things, and I think that's especially true in business.
your father's legacy and your direct experience working in annual giving gave you exposure to an underserved area, and you saw that niche and you knew how to exploit it. You understood what the needs were, you understood what the market demand was, and so you created AGN Resources to capitalize on that. Talk about the experiences you had as you launched the company. What were those early stages like for you personally?
So again, I mentioned earlier that I started it while I had a day job. So it wasn't like I, quit my job and ran up my credit card bills and started my own business. I kind of started it as an idea. It was a, early on, it was a blog that I was writing where I was offering advice to help annual giving programs. Because of that, and maybe this is unique, from in terms of my experience, but it was a very gradual process. And when I even started it, I didn't even think I was starting a business. As a matter of fact, very early on, I had to make a decision as to, as it started growing, what was this thing, AGN? Was it a nonprofit organization, an association, or was it a business? And I decided that I wanted it to be a business. But it was, I think it was the fact that early on, I was really just focused on creating value, and for the people who were beginning to rely on AGN, who were coming to our website and reading our articles and taking our advice. I wasn't necessarily trying to create a profitable business, and I think because that was the case, it sort of allowed me to kind of take my time and to build, create a value proposition and to create a brand. That I think in the long run, really served us well.
So this wasn't really something you rushed into. You took stock of the direction you wanted to take this new venture called AGN Resources. But of course, there must have been challenges. Can you tell us about how you addressed some of the challenges facing the company?
In terms of the, let me think just for a second. The, challenges that we face right now, we are a small business, I think, in the grand scheme of things. So I think we face the challenges that a lot of small businesses have, which is, how do you grow? I think one of our challenges is we're very virtual, and we've kind of grown up that way. We, one of the main things we do is we produce webinars, training webinars to help college and university fundraising staff learn how to do their jobs better. And we've been able to do that by recruiting subject matter experts from around the country. And even our staff, some of us are based in Massachusetts. We've got staff in, other parts of other states as well, down in the South, up in New England. And, in many ways, we've got the benefit of technology now that we can do that. But I also think that's a challenge too. A course of a normal day, the people who work for AGN are not sitting in a room together usually, unless we come together on a regular basis for retreats and meetings and things like that. But that's we do it, but that's a real challenge for us, being virtual. And I think, I think there's a greater lesson in that for a lot of people in that you can there's a lot you can accomplish through technology now, but sometimes just the fact that you're able to do it. There's sometimes underlying challenges, and one of our big challenges is maybe being a little too virtual. I mentioned that we started and folk with a niche, and I think that was a real strength of ours. We were very focused on annual giving, and we continue to be focused on annual giving. But I think as we look to grow, in thinking about how you can grow, maintain a focus on your niche, but also grow the business. I mean, that's a challenge too, and that's something, I think about every day. We started the company was called Annual Giving Network, and of course the acronyms are AGN. We made the decision not too long ago that we would keep the acronym AGN, but really rebrand the company AGN Resources as a way to allow us to sort of stay focused on our core mission, which was, supporting annual giving programs, but also grow to take what we do and support other areas of advancement as well, including alumni relations and development communications and advancement services and major gifts and stewardship and donor relations. So we just didn't want to get, we wanted to continue to service annual giving programs and not get too pigeonholed and just doing that, since we think we can help these other organizations as well. I think lastly, big challenges, for me as an organization that's supposed to be focused on delivering best practices, it was one thing while I was working within the industry as a practitioner and started this business at night that, sort of complemented each other well. I think now growing the business, I get focused on a lot of administrative things. And so I think kind of keeping my saw sharpened, so to speak, as it relates to understanding best practices in higher education fundraising is something that's important. And it's a challenge, it's something I got to think about.
I think a lot of the challenges that you're currently facing, small business challenges aside, are the same challenges that a lot of higher education institutions are facing. The virtualization of the classroom, trying to diversify their value proposition to the community and to their target audience. Of course, you have been largely successful in overcoming a number of your challenges as you've grown. AGN Resources is widely adopted by a lot of leading institutions, and a consensus in the annual giving community that AGN Resources is highly valuable. So what advice would you give entrepreneurs looking to start their own company in the fundraising space?
Well, I'd start by saying find your niche, right? What is the thing that you're really good at, that you like to do, that other people might not know much about? And get in touch with that, right? And don't think that there's anything that's an idea that's too small. As a matter of fact, sometimes the more focused and detailed your niche is, the more powerful it can be. And then secondly, I would say, focus on creating value first before you worry about making money. Figure out within that thing, that niche, that thing that you do that excites you, that you're good at, that you know something about, how can you take that and create something that would be valuable to another person and get in touch with that, right? What is that thing? For me, it was that I knew a lot about annual giving, and I had worked in, a number of organizations, and I'd worked for some great people, and I understood how to run a successful annual giving program. And I was able to package that up and say, I want to take that and share that with other people and focus on doing that, because that will be valuable and that will help them. I wasn't worried too much about how I would, translate that into a business plan or how I would make money. But that was, I think that was important. And then once you do that, then you can focus on monetizing it. I think that kind of comes later. And that's an important part of business, is figuring out how do you make this thing profitable. And I think when you do that, my other piece of advice is, follow the money, figure out who your market is and identify within that, who are those individuals that are, see what you do as potentially valuable. And those are your customers, and then focus on your customers and get to know your customers and sell to your customers and be valuable to your customers. And I think everything else will work out from there.
And what qualities and skills do you attribute to being a successful leader?
That's a good question. Probably not a hard question to answer. I think there's three that come to mind right away. One is being curious. Whether you consider yourself a serial entrepreneur or just a small business owner, or just a leader within an organization. I think leadership is also about curiosity, right? It's about kind of always asking questions. How can we do things better? Asking questions about what is it that we actually do, and what is it that's creating value, and who is it that's relying on us for what we do, and really being in touch with those things. But I think if you're not asking questions, if you're not curious, if you're just kind of complacent, it's hard to be a good leader. I think it's important to be really focused. I heard a story once that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates were at a meeting, and whoever was leading the meeting asked everybody in the room to take out, handed them a note card and asked everybody to write down the one word that they considered key to their own personal success. This is obviously a room filled with successful business people. And funny enough, Buffett and Gates both wrote down the same word, and it was focused. And I really believe that being focused is important. And that is not easy in anything today, because there's a lot of going on in the world. It's particularly important in business, and I think being a leader and running a company, you got to be really, really, really focused. I think lastly, you need to be willing to make mistakes. You can't. You're not going to move forward unless you try new things, and you're not going to try new things if you're afraid of making mistakes. You actually have to kind of view mistakes as a success in a way, and the more mistakes that you're able to make, it means you're trying. And I'd rather have one great, I'd rather have 99 mistakes and one great accomplishment than, no mistakes and no accomplishments.
So really there are three pillars to being a successful leader: curiosity, focus, and willingness to take risk. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've seen in your career as the most significant disruptors in the fundraising space and how organizations have successfully adapted?
Sure thing. I would say two big ones stand out. One is cost of education, right? The rising cost of tuition has been a major disruptor. I think that's changed a lot of people's perceptions about higher education. It's also changed accessibility to education, and it's got people sort of thinking longer term about the value of colleges and universities, and whether or not they're really worth the cost. And then the other is technology, right? I mean, there's no doubt that technology has changed the world that we live in, and that's been a major disruptor to education as well. How students interact with one another, how students interact with their teachers, and just how people access information on a daily basis. If you want to learn something, if I have a question, my instinct is to go to Google and to search it. And sort of where that leads me, I think, is probably what separates different experiences. But, I think technology has been a major disruptor as well.
When it comes to managing an organization during a period of disruption, you've been involved with recruiting and hiring talent across numerous organizations, and you've consulted with organizations on process improvements and change management. How have organizations successfully navigated change or times of disruption?
Yeah. Well, I think the best way to manage change is to try to avoid it, to be quite honest with you. And the way that you avoid it is to invest in strong leadership. So I think the simple answer to that question is being committed to identifying and recruiting the best possible talent that you can to lead your organizations. And if you have great leaders who are stable and committed and willing to stick around, for the period that they're needed, then you're just going to, I think you're going to have a successful organization. It's when you have weak leadership or you have too much transition, I think that's when you become vulnerable as an organization. So I think, the answer to the question is focusing on hiring and retaining great leadership is the key to navigating, anything.
Now, looking forward to the future, how do you envision fundraising and education evolving?
Well, my opinion is that I see this coming full circle. There's been such a big impact of technology and media and social media in particular. And, I'm thinking specifically of advancement programs and annual giving and alumni relations programs. There's been so much focus and, to be honest, I would say excitement about what technology has to offer in terms of how fundraising organizations do their work. I think it's brought changes too. I mean, I mentioned I started running a phone-a-thon call center 25 years ago, and the call center of 25 years ago is a very different beast than it is now, and probably not, not a big part of that has been, mobile phones and sort of people's perceptions of call centers and telemarketing and things. But people focus so much on technology. I think that really where we're going to end up focusing on in the future is personal relationships and how organizations can cultivate great personal relationships with students, with faculty, with alumni, and, really keep them connected to the institution and to one another and keeping communities. And I think that's going to be the ultimate challenge of organizations going forward is how do they really maintain and cultivate great personal relationships. And that's not, that's not a technology solution. That's a human solution.
So the future of fundraising in higher education is really rooted in its foundation, personal relationships. Well, thank you for joining us today, Dan, and thank you for the invaluable insights into your career as a professional fundraiser, managing your own business, and your thoughts on leadership and the future of fundraising. If you want to hear more from industry professionals, be sure to visit advancementdaily.com, where you'll be able to access all of our interviews, as well as our archive of articles and publications. Happy fundraising!